Can you think of a time when you've interviewed someone like that and you have been able to sort of get in through the back door and find a way around their talking
with
points?
With a politician, sitting in the Oval Office and interviewing a president, which I've done a couple of times, is very memorable for all of the things going on around you. But as for getting inside the person you're talking to, or, you know, who's the person has been interviewed more often than I've interviewed people, you know, which is saying a lot. That doesn't happen. It just doesn't happen. Political interviews are really tough. And I have nothing but the greatest respect for people who do them really well. But I was once sitting next in the studio, sitting next to my then co-host and colleague, Linda Wertheimer, when the director of management and the budget was doing a live interview with us, something which we desperately try not to do. No matter what question Linda asked about the budget, she got the same answer about the president is looking at the budget, blah, 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 the president looking at blah, 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 blah. And as Linda said afterwards, she said, if this went on for one more question, I was going to ask, and what do you think the Redskins' chances are next year? Because she would have gotten the same answer. The president, the questioner, the interviewer is irrelevant to those people.
How many interviews might you do in a day?
On a very busy day, maybe five, much more typically three. And they can vary tremendously. Nowadays, we might very well talk with somebody about something about Russia or Ukraine. Then there might be something that, somebody had a good, clever idea from the meeting about talking with a guy with a pet raccoon in Tennessee and who refuses to relinquish it to the local authorities, so he's going to run for governor.
Is that a real story, or did you just
could
make
I make that
up?
I couldn't make that up, which, you know, turns out to be a great deal of fun. And then there might be a book interview for which I've been first obviously reading the book, but also, you know, looking at other sources to see if there's something interesting I might bring to that.
Do you vote?
I do. I don't vote in any primaries, but I vote in general elections. I draw the line at party participation.
As you mature, do you find yourself...
I'm still mature, by the way. I'm glad you pointed that out.
Do you find yourself becoming more tolerant of points of view that might have irked you a decade ago, or do you find yourself becoming more cynical as you learn more about what happens behind the scene? You have this view that not a lot of people get. How does that affect your outlook personally?
I don't know that I'm... That's a good question, Rachel. I don't know that I'm really a lot more cynical. I think there are moments when I'm not as optimistic, I'm not as easily hopeful about things as I might have been. I had only done one real reporting trip to Egypt before Tahrir Square. When it happened, I remember thinking and saying in our meetings, the Muslim Brotherhood is going to come to power in Egypt now. I mean, I realize there's a lot of enthusiasm out there for democracy, but the Muslim Brotherhood is going to come to power, and there's going to be a challenge between the army and the Muslim Brotherhood. That seemed obvious to me. I couldn't achieve the kind of youthful optimism about young people in public squares demonstrating. Forgive me my discontinuity here, but when I was once covering anti-nuclear protests in Germany, against basing U.S. missiles in West Germany, a West German politician once told me, he was very dismissive of the Green Party, and he says, what is this Green Party? Now, when I was young, we had the Brown Alternative Party, the Nazis. He said, we believed in that. We didn't believe in Auschwitz, we didn't believe in Stalingrad, but we believed in a new order. You know, he says, since when is the sincerity of young people a test of policy? We were wrong, is what he's saying. And I think that I'm more likely to be skeptical about the sincere positions of young people than I was when I was covering the sincere positions of young people, when I was one of them. So perhaps that's a change.
Has there ever
been? I sound so old. Jeez, Rachel, you're bringing out the deep curmudgeon in me.
It doesn't sound curmudgeonly. It sounds wise.
Uh-huh.
It's a fine
distinction, right? Well,
but an important one.
Yes.
So then, are we evolving as a species, or are you just seeing the same stories told over and over in different configurations? I mean, the Arab uprising, for instance.
Yeah.
Does that mean that democracy in fits and starts is spreading?
You're taking me in over my head intellectually. I mean, is there some Hegelian direction to social and political existence that's driving us towards some positive end? You know, what's happening right now in the former Soviet Union is very discouraging. It's terribly. And for those of us who, like me, got there when the Berlin Wall came down and experience the huge optimism at the end of the Cold War and at the end of communism in Eastern and Central Europe, to see what it's come down to at this point. And who knows what comes next, whether it's creeping annexation or just harassment or a real invasion. It's terribly discouraging. It shouldn't make people feel that there aren't things to stand for in the world. There aren't values that we should support. But as for those who declare the final triumph of democracy or the end of history or the end of conflict, we should be disabused of such thoughts.
Have you ever fallen apart on the air in a fit of laughter or completely lost control?
When I was interviewing Mel Brooks for a recording, that I couldn't control. And everything I said was to play the music from the producers and from the musical. And everything I asked him, he said, "Siegel, just play the music. Just play the music." All right, I asked him a question. "Siegel, just play the music. Play the music." And finally he said, "Look, what time does this show go on the air?" I said, 4 o'clock. I said, "So I figure 4 o'clock, the jurors for the Tonys should be just about waking up from the cosmopolitan stupor the night before. And they'll turn on the radio, they'll hear my music, and they'll vote me a Tony. So just play the music."
I want to win the Tony as the best composer.
I understand.
And I can't win unless they hear the songs.
I reacted pretty much as you did.
Robert Siegel, thanks so much for joining us.
You're very welcome. It's been my pleasure.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for coming in to talk with us.